Okay, well, in the spring of 1950, a sales executive was relayed a message from his wife. And that message was not to worry because we're in good hands. That sales executive later took those words and modified them and turned them into an advertising slogan, a slogan that became one of the most recognizable slogans in advertising history. You're in good hands is still used by the Allstate Insurance Company 71 years after it was first used. Now, in the message today, we're going to look at being in good hands, not in the good hands of Allstate Insurance, but in the hands of God. In the hands of God, what does that really mean? And do we want to be in the hands of God? In the hands of God, I've broken this subject into three areas. First, how and when do we get into the hands of God? Second, what can we expect when we are in the hands of God? And third, what can separate us from the hands of God? So how and when do we get into the hands of God? We don't need to turn there, as it is a memory verse. But John 6:44 says that no one can come to Christ unless the Father draws him or her. The Father has to personally invite someone. They can't decide for themselves that they want to have a relationship with him. Now, they can pray to God, and God may at times intervene on their behalf. But they can't build a real relationship with the Father unless he initiates it. This is because ever since Adam and Eve chose to live apart from God, the world is presently cut off from God. Therefore, God must first extend his hand before they can have a lasting relationship with him. Okay, how and when does God draw someone? When is God's hand extended? Well, let's first consider the first generation Christians. How and when does God extend his hand to them? Let's go to Matthew chapter 13. Matthew chapter 13. We're going to pick it up in verse 44. When we consider first generation, there are those who were not seeking meaning in life, but yet there were those also who were seeking meaning in life. So here in Matthew 13, verse 44. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field, which a man found and hid. And for joy over it, he goes and sells all that he has and buys that field. So here's a non-religious person who stumbles across the truth. They weren't looking for it, but through unique circumstances, God introduces this person to the truth. Some here and watching online can tell stories of how they or someone they knew accidentally stumbled across the World Tomorrow broadcast on the radio or television. Others unintentionally came across a Discern, Plain Truth, an article or a blog on Life, Hope, and Truth. And what they discovered became very important to them. Verse 45. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant seeking beautiful pearls, who, when he had found one pearl of great price, went and sold all that he had and bought it. So here's a person who is seeking the truth. They're looking for meaning in life. And they come across something that is unlike anything he or she has read or seen before. Through both of these types of peoples, God's Spirit draws them to the truth. God's Spirit opens their minds to understanding. In other passages, this understanding is likened to a veil that's being removed. I'm sure that the first generation here can remember how God opened their mind. When they began to understand what the Bible said, when it was apparent that the Father was drawing them. But, God's hand was in their lives even before then. God's hand was in their lives even before then. Let's go over to Psalm 105. Psalm 105. This psalm talks about God making promises to Abraham and his descendants, how he fulfilled those promises from one man, ultimately making Israel a nation. And let's pick it up in verse 12. Psalm 105, verse 12. When they, the descendants of Abraham, were few in number, indeed very few, and strangers in it, when they went from one nation to another, from one kingdom to another people, he, God, permitted no one to do them wrong. Yes, he rebuked kings for their sakes, saying, "Do not touch my anointed ones, and do my prophets no harm." So here God's hand looked over his anointed ones, physical Israel. He looked over and protected them long before he began dealing with them directly. You and I were spiritual Israel. And likewise, even before God called what we refer to as first generation, his hand was with us, protecting us and looking out for us until he actually called us. Married with two children, my dad was stationed in Alaska when he was in the Air Force. One day, his commanding officer came and said either he or another man had to be on a particular flight. So they decided the easy way. They flipped on it. The other man went on the flight. That plane crashed into a mountainside, killing everyone on board. In fact, from what I understand, that plane is still on that mountainside. They never recovered the bodies. Was God's hand involved in that? I believe so. See, if we look back at pre-conversion, we can see where God must have intervened in our lives, our parents' lives, our grandparents' lives, where he saved, protected, and preserved, just as he did for the descendants of Abraham. We don't know how long or what all God did for our sakes before he actually called us, but his hand was definitely in our lives before we even knew it. Let's go over now to 1 Corinthians chapter 7. 1 Corinthians 7. Let's now look at 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th generation Christians. When did God extend his hand to them? 1 Corinthians 7. We'll pick it up in verse 14. Now we're breaking into a thought here about unbelieving mates being set apart because of the believing spouses. Verse 14, for the unbelieving husband is sanctified, set apart by the wife, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified by the husband. Otherwise, your children would be unclean. But now they are holy. Now they are holy. They are set apart. God has extended his hand to the children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, even adopted children of those who believe. Let's go back to Psalm 78 now. Psalm 78 about this 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th generation Christians. Psalm 78, let's look at verse 2, in verse 2. I will open my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings of old. Now we could say these dark sayings of old are the mystery of God's truth. Verse 3, which we have heard and known, and our fathers have told us, we will not hide them from their children, telling the generation to come the praises of the Lord and his strength and his wonderful works that he has done. For he established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers that they should make them known to their children. Why? Verse 6. That the generation to come might know them, the children who would be born, that they may arise and declare them to their children. Verse 7, that they may set their hope in God. From birth, the children of believers have God's hand extended to them. They don't have to stumble across the truth or even have to be seeking it out. This calling, this hope in God, is theirs for the taking from childhood. Young people, what an honor. What an honor. God's open hand is extended to you now. Will you take his hand? So whether we are first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth generation, it's the moment we respond. The moment we reach out and take God's hand and commit our lives to him, that is when we become in the hands of God. Before, God's hand was there working with us, but by positively responding, we are now in his hand. And this concept of being in God's hand is more than just being directly in his grasp. Let's notice this in Isaiah 51. Isaiah 51, verse 15. Isaiah 51, the first part of verse 15. But I am the Lord your God. And let's look at the middle part of verse 16. I have covered you with the shadow of my hand. The shadow of my hand. In the book of Psalms, this is referred to as the shadow of his wings. Now, if you want to look these verses up later, I'll give them to you. There's Psalm 17:8, Psalm 36:7, Psalm 57:1, and Psalm 63:7. So being in the hands of God means that he is directly and actively involved in the events that are happening in our lives. God has a hold of us, in other words. Or God may not have a hold on us, but his presence is close by. We are in his shadow. We'll see this as we continue into the message. Okay, let's look at the second point. Now that we're in the hands of God, what can we expect? Now, there's a lot we could cover with this point. Of course, don't have time to cover it all. But I do want to look at three things. And the first thing that we can expect is character development. Character development. Once we're in the hands of God, he is going to get busy. God is literally going to work on us. He's going to roll up his sleeves, so to speak, and build his holy, righteous character in us. The Apostle Paul tells us in Philippians 1:6 that he who has begun a good work in you will complete it. So let's go over to Jeremiah chapter 31. I think there's 800 verses today. 764. Jeremiah 31, verse 32. We do have a few scriptures today. We need to squeeze God's hands tight because it's going to be an eventful journey as he takes us out of a world that is full of sin. Now, this passage is about the new covenant, but notice what God did for ancient Israel. Jeremiah 31, verse 32. Not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day that I took them by the hand to lead them out of the land of Egypt. Egypt represented sin. And as we reach out our hand to God, he is going to take our hand and lead us out of sin. Now let's go back to Isaiah 64:6. Isaiah 64:6. God is going to get busy with you and me. Living in Satan's world, along with our human nature, means God has a lot to do with each and every one of us. Isaiah 64:6. But we are like an unclean thing, and all our righteousness are like filthy rags. Verse 8. But now, O Lord, you are our Father, we are the clay, and you are a potter, and all we are the work of your hand. Being in God's hand means he's going to replace a life we may have thought was righteous with a life filled with real righteousness. Being in God's hand means we're going to be molded into the image of Jesus Christ. When we make God a part of our lives, he's going to make us see ourselves as we really are. God will show us where we need to change. He's going to lead us down paths that will help us develop the fruits of his Spirit. And this being led by God's hand, this process of conversion will at times be pleasant, but at times it's not going to be so pleasant. Since God is actively at work building his character in us, he must at times show us our sins and our shortcomings. Let's go over to verse 12 and read more about this. Hebrews chapter 12. Again, being in God's hands means we can expect correction. Hebrews 12, let's pick it up in verse 5. And you have forgotten the exhortation which speaks to you as sons. My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor be discouraged when you are rebuked by him. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens and scourges every son whom he receives. If you endure chastening, God deals with you as sons. For what son is there whom a father does not chasten? I remember as a child, when my dad would discipline me. Before the discipline was carried out, there was always the lecture. The lecture. Son, why did you do this? I don't know. Do you realize what you did? And on it went. And I thought, Dad, just get it over with. But I had to lecture first. Verse 10, for they, our fathers, indeed for a few days chastened us as it seemed best to them. But he, for our profit, for our spiritual good, that we may be partakers of his holiness. Verse 11, now no chastening seems to be joyful for the present, but painful. Nevertheless, afterward, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. After Dad carried out the punishment, it hurt. But an important lesson was being taught to me. Wrong behavior will result in painful consequences. Wrong behavior will result in painful consequences. Verse 12, therefore strengthen the hands which hang down and the feeble knees. Now the discipline I received from my dad was ultimately a good thing. And being disciplined by God, though unpleasant at times, is a good thing too. Instead of being discouraged and wanting to just quit when God's hand corrects us, let's be encouraged and move forward, knowing that He is correcting us for our eternal good. In this character development, God will also test what we have been taught by Him, just as parents will see what their children do when faced in certain situations. For example, most, if not all of us here watching online, were taught as children that it's wrong to steal. That it's wrong. But then a child finds money or a toy that they like just lying on the floor in the store, in the parking lot. What will they do? Will they just pick it up and keep it? Finders keepers, losers weepers. Or will they try to find the rightful owner? For a child, it can be so tempting just to pick it up and keep it. But their character is being tested. And what parent is not encouraged when they see their children do the right thing? When they see them do the right thing. In this case, trying to find the rightful owner. But sometimes children don't always do what's right. And they come up short. And that disappoints us as parents. We parents have been often disappointed by things our children do. Yet our love for our children doesn't just end because they come up short at times. How many times have we come up short spiritually? Does God disown us then? Want nothing to do with you anymore. You failed. Even when our faith is weak, God's hand is there to pick us back up, to help us. Remember when Peter started walking on the water? And because he began to doubt, he started sinking. What happened next? Did Jesus let him drown? Even though he was disappointed in Peter's lack of faith, Jesus still reached out his hand and helped Peter back up. Even at these times of testing, we are in the shadow of God's hand. He is close by. He's ready to help. But he's seen how much spiritual growth we have made. Like Peter, I'll put my hand up as one who has found out the hard way at times that my faith was not as strong as I thought it was. Of course, remember Peter? He said, I'll never deny you. No, not me. They might, but I never will. Yeah. Well, how many times have we thought that we were stronger than what we really were? We found out. And it's discouraging to find out that you failed a spiritual test. But God was still nearby, and He intervened as He saw fit. Yet God has never given up on anyone, nor will He ever give up on anyone who continues to strive to be like Him and have a relationship with Him. And as we do grow spiritually, sometimes the tests get harder and longer. There are those who are tested over the Sabbath, and some of God's people lose their job over the Sabbath, and right away they get a better one. But then there are those that lose their job over the Sabbath, and it's a long time before they get a good paying job again. Others have serious health issues and get healed immediately, while others suffer with health issues for years and years. Why is that? Is God not fair? Why is that? We must remember that God is building His righteous character in us, both collectively and individually. God knows where we need to grow, what needs to develop spiritually. And He allows certain situations, certain tests to help us grow, both collectively and individually. We're told in Acts 14:22 that it is through much tribulation that we will enter the kingdom of God. As humans, we're so short-sighted and can't see the big picture of what God is doing. God is looking out for our eternal good. And some difficulties He allows us to go through is to help our character grow. And even though some of the hard things we go through may seem to have no end in sight, we must remember that we're still in God's hand. Remember all the things that happened to Joseph when he was obeying God. Through all his difficulties, being sold as a slave, being sent to prison for 2 years after Potiphar's wife lied about him, Scripture tells us, still, the Lord was with Joseph. Now, it's easy for us to read how the story ends. We can just go over here and read the end. That's how it ends for Joseph. It's good. But Joseph had to live it. He had to live it. He knew what the dream is foretold, but the circumstances he found himself in must have made him at times wonder how things were really going to end. In prison, did he get discouraged in prison? I sure would have. How will your story end? How will my story end? We can't look somewhere and see how it's going to end right here, like we can with Joseph. Our story is still in progress. We know what God has promised us. The difficulties we can find ourselves in can cause us to doubt God at times, if we let it. And that's what Satan wants. He wants us to doubt. But like Joseph, the Lord is with us. His hand, we're in His hand. We are in His hand. The Master Potter is preparing a glorious future for us. We have to keep that in mind. Know that God tells us how that's how the story is going to end if we remain faithful. Now, the next point that we can expect, the things we can expect, could be included in this character development. But I feel it can also be a separate point by itself, too. And that point is, God will allow us to experience pain and suffering. God will allow us to experience pain and suffering. So as we look into this part, let's first consider a teaching that's been around a long time. And that teaching is often referred to as the health, wealth gospel. The health, wealth gospel. Those who believe this think that as long as someone is obeying God, they will have good health, will prosper, and will prosper financially. Life will have little pain, free from suffering. So if you do have difficulties, then obviously you must be doing something wrong. The problem with this teaching? It's not biblical at all. This is Satan's world. We're still in it. And just because we're God's people, that doesn't make us automatically immune to the pain and suffering that this world can bring. A good example of this can be seen in the life of Job. The book of Job, it's one of the oldest manuscripts in the Bible, written some 3,500 years ago. So interestingly, one of the oldest lessons recorded is that bad things can happen to good people, even God's people. Now, in the first few verses of this book, we read that Job was a righteous man. He had 10 children, great wealth, and was very concerned about his children. Then there's a discussion between God and Satan about Job's loyalty to God. Let me read verses 10 through 12 to you. This is from the first chapter. This is Satan speaking. Have you not made a hedge around him, around his household, and around all that he has on every side? Verse 11. But now, stretch out your hand and touch all that he has, and he will surely curse you to your face. Now, incredibly, Satan wants God to curse Job. He wants God to use his hand to bring problems to Job. Verse 12. And the Lord said to Satan, behold, all that he has is in your power. Only do not lay a hand on his person. God wasn't going to use his hand to bring problems to his faithful servant. But he did allow Job to temporarily be placed into the hand of Satan. But even though Job was in Satan's hand, the shadow of God's hand was still near Job. We know what happens next. Tragedy strikes Job. In an instant, he loses his wealth, and even worse, he loses his 10 children, whom he loved very much. But to Satan's surprise, Job did not curse God, but still trusted him. And then, of course, God allowed Satan to attack Job's health, and even then, Job still trusted God. But then, time went by. Time went by. This became a long, hard, and painful trial for Job. Job's health was not improving as he continued to suffer from the boils. And what happens to Job can happen to God's people, can happen to you and me. Job became discouraged. He got discouraged. We have to battle discouragement, don't we? It's what Satan wants us to do. He wants us to question God's faithfulness. And if our problems don't go away soon, as soon as we want, Satan continues to try to beat us down. Just beat, 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 and wear us out. That's what he tries to do. And as time went on, Job began to wonder why God allowed such tragedy in his life. I've been trying to do what was right. Why did this happen to me? I've been faithfully serving God. He even got to the point that he thanks God is treating him unfairly. And if that's not bad enough, his three friends, now granted, at least his three friends came to him, but his three friends apparently subscribed to the health, wealth gospel. They tell Job that he must have sinned for this tragedy to have happened to him. Come on, Job, fess up. What bad thing did you do? Let's go to chapter 13, verse 15 of Job. Job 13, 15. Even with the mental wrestling of God being seemingly unfair, notice what Job said. Notice what Job said in chapter 13, verse 15. Says, though he slay me, yet will I trust him. Though he slay me, yet will I trust him. Job didn't understand why God allowed all these calamities to happen to him. But he still trusted God, even if a severe trial would end up with his death. Job understood that ultimately God would take care of him, and that his death would not be the final end. He understood that a better life awaited him. Look across the page at chapter 14, verse 14. If a man dies, shall he live again? All the days of my hard service, I will wait till my change comes. Verse 15, you shall call, and I will answer. I will answer you, the resurrection. You shall desire the work of your hands. Again, here is God's hand working in the lives of his saints. Verse 16, for now you number my steps. For now, you number my steps. Even though he was in a lot of pain at the moment, even though he was mentally struggling of why God allowed this tragedy to happen to him, Job still understood that God was in control of his life. Psalm 31, a few pages over, Psalm 31, verse 14 and 15. David also understood this. Psalm 31, verses 14 and 15. But as for me, I trust in you, O Lord. I say, you are my God. Verse 15, my times are in your hands. My times are in your hands. Being in the hand of God means it is his choosing. It's God's choosing to intervene and preserve our lives, or he can choose not to intervene. Remember the unwavering words of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, what they told King Nebuchadnezzar. Our God is able to deliver us from your hand. But if not, he's able, but he may choose not to. But regardless, we're not going to bow down and serve your God. When we took God's hand, when we responded and took his hand and committed our lives to him, we acknowledged that his will always take precedence over our will. His will always take precedence over our will. That means your time, my time, is in God's hands. We have to trust completely his perfect timing, and at times, that can be hard, especially when we're going through pain and suffering. It was hard for Job. He struggled with it. He said, and he thought some things he shouldn't have. But God never forsook Job and helped him prevail. Satan really tried to make Job curse God, which, of course, in the end, he never did. He said some things he shouldn't have. He thought some things he shouldn't have. But he never cursed God like Satan said he would. Who else did Satan want to go after? Remember Peter? Christ told Peter Satan wanted to sift him as wheat. Was Satan's desire to destroy Job and Peter isolated events? Does Satan no longer go after or ask God's permission to personally go after someone? Peter tells us that Satan is a roaring lion seeking whom he can devour. I imagine these conversations still go on, and Satan targets certain people. One important lesson from the book of Job is that God sometimes allows pain, suffering, and even tragedy to happen to His chosen people. Locally, we've gone through a lot these last several weeks, haven't we? But we're still in the hands of God. See, the world experiences pain and suffering too, but they're not in the hands of God yet. And when difficulties and tragedies happen to them, they're overcome with sadness, not really knowing the future. And because we have experienced pain and suffering too, we can empathize with them. And when God begins to work with them, when He removes the veil from their eyes in the millennium and during the second resurrection, we're going to be able to better serve them because we'll be able to relate to what they've gone through. Okay, let's look at the third point, or the third part of this, what we can expect. And that is God will look out for us and take care of us now and into eternity. Let's go to Psalm 103. Psalm 103. How often do we think about the things that God does for us? Psalm 103, let's pick it up in verse 1. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that is within me. Bless His holy name. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget not all His benefits. Being in the hands of God brings incredible benefits. When someone is looking for a job, they consider the benefits an employer offers. Health insurance, vacation, profit sharing, etc. What benefits does God offer? Verse 3. Who forgives all your iniquities? Who heals all your diseases? Who redeems your life from destruction? Who crowns you with loving kindness and tender mercies? Who satisfies your mouth with good things so that your youth is renewed like the eagles? Notice these benefits. Forgiveness, healings, redemption, loving kindness, mercy, good things, and purpose in life. Do I recognize these benefits in our lives? We're here in the Psalm. Let's go back to Psalm 23. Psalm 23. It's amazing how much the Psalms mention being in the hands of God. Psalm 23, verse 1. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. God takes care of our needs. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. Or as my margin reads, waters of rest. In good times and difficult times, our lives can be at peace because God is looking out for us. Verse 3, He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness. When we're heading down wrong paths, God's hand will lead us back to the right paths. Verse 6, surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Here's proof. Here's a good indicator that God's hand is part of our lives. Do I recognize the goodness and mercy that follows us? Are we appreciative of it? Do we recognize it? Goodness and mercy. Not disappointment and heartache, but goodness and mercy. John chapter 10, verse 28. John 10, verse 28. David talked about dwelling in the house of the Lord forever. This is Christ speaking. John 10, verses 28 and 29. This is Christ speaking. And I give them, Christ's sheep, eternal life. And they shall never perish. Neither shall anyone snatch them out of my hand. Verse 29. My Father, who has given them to me, is greater than all. And no one is able to snatch them out of my Father's hand. Jesus Christ has personally written our names in His book of life. He wrote that with His own hand. And as long as we are faithful, nothing can separate us from God. Nothing. Not even death. We don't have time to go into the incredible future that God has in store for us when we step into eternity. But it's more than we can possibly imagine. What a blessing it is indeed to be in the hands of God. But it is possible to be separated from the hand of God, to be outside of God's shadow. And that brings us to the last point. What can separate us from the hand of God? Now, since we have seen that God won't let anyone take us from His hand, then the only way we can be removed, our hand, be removed from God's hand, is if we do it ourselves. If we do it ourselves. Now, the most obvious way we're separated from God's hand is if we're living a sinful life. Let's go to Isaiah 59. This is a familiar passage. Isaiah 59. Of course, we all fall short in sin. That's part of overcoming. That's not what we're talking about here. What we're referring to are sins that aren't repented of, a wrong lifestyle we don't or won't want to change. That's where the danger is. Isaiah 59, verse 1. Behold, the Lord's hand is not shortened that it cannot save, nor his ear heavy that it cannot hear. But your iniquities have separated you from your God. If we don't see blessings in our lives, if we don't see goodness and mercy following us, maybe we need to examine ourselves, our lives. Ask God to show us any secret faults that may have taken us out of the shadow of his hand. And once we recognize where we need to change, let's go back to God and be under his protective shadow and grab his hand. Another way we can separate ourselves from God's hand is by wandering away or drifting away from the right path God has set us on. In 2013, Geraldine Largay was hiking the Appalachian Trail. She left the trail one morning, but once off the trail, she got lost and couldn't find her way back. It wasn't until 2 years later that they found her remains. Her notebook was found with moss growing all over it. The notebook was titled, George, Please Read, XOXO. George was her husband. The entries explained that she had spent about 2 days wandering after a wrong turn across a stream, and that she had tried to find ridges where she could regain some sense of where she was at. But she never made it back because she wandered away too far. Geraldine died 26 days later. Hebrews chapter 2. Hebrews chapter 2. We must never stray from the path that God has set us on. It's dangerous. Very dangerous. Hebrews 2, verse 1. Therefore, we must give the more earnest heed to the things we have heard, lest we drift away. Verse 3. How shall we escape if we neglect so great a salvation? We can't allow the distractions of the world to take our minds off the incredible calling God has given us. Focusing more on the physical things of life instead of the spiritual things can cause us to slowly let go of God's hand, and then we'll be grabbing hold of something else. If we don't stay focused on where we should be going, we can wander too far away and find ourselves like Geraldine, not able to find our way back to the right path. And the third way we can separate ourselves from God is if we willfully walk away from God. If we willfully walk away. We're here in Hebrews. Let's go over to chapter 10. Hebrews 10, verse 26. For if we sin willfully after we have received the knowledge of the truth, there no longer remains a sacrifice for sins, but a certain fearful expectation of judgment and fiery indignation, which will devour the adversaries. Verse 31. It is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. Incredibly, those who willingly walk away from the hand of God will unwillingly find themselves back in the hands of God. But this time, it's not going to be a good thing, but a fearful thing. This is why we need to take our calling very seriously, especially in the times we're living in. But for us who have willingly taken God's hand and are squeezing it tight, nothing can separate us from him, not even death. One last verse, Luke 23:46. Luke 23:46. Notice what Jesus said just before he died. Luke 23:46. Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. Christ confidently entrusted his eternal life into the hands of the Father. Our elder brother had no doubt at all, that his future was sure and secure being in the hands of the Father. And He set us an incredible example of the trust we should have in the Father, regardless of what difficulties may come our way. No, the surety of our lives doesn't lie in an insurance company. Rather, our confidence, our assurance, our eternal future lie in the good hands of God.